Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program, this Thursday, the 17th of November. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I am Abubakar Jallo on our social media desk following the topics trending in the world of Facebook and Twitter.
Coming up, EU hosts Brussels Donor Conference on the Central African Republic as NGOs call for CEAR's special criminal court.
It is a short-term solution given that the state of the national justice system is very weak at the moment.
President Barack Obama is in Berlin. What do Germans think of him?
Natürlich werden wir den vermissen, gerade in Hinsicht jetzt zu dem neuen Präsidenten.
Of course we all miss him, especially when you think of who is succeeding him.
Er war freundlich.
He was a kind person, good-natured and peace-loving.
And we have a couple of responses on Facebook to that EU conference in Brussels about to forge new strategies and make the Central African Republic self-reliant.
Stay tuned for all that and much more to come on the program. But first, let's listen to what's happening from around the globe.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Opposition leader Sami Badibinga has been elected as the Democratic Republic of Congo's new prime minister on Thursday. The move follows a deal struck between the government and opposition groups, which would effectively allow President Joseph Kabila to stay in power after his term ends next month. Kabila has been president since 2001. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has welcomed outgoing U.S. President Barack Obama in Berlin. Security has been tight for Obama's last official foreign trip, as the two leaders are expected to give a joint press conference on world security and on Germany's relationship with incoming U.S. President Donald Trump. In his sixth and final trip to the country, Obama spoke to German media on his relationship with Merkel.
She has great credibility, and she is willing to fight for those values in a way that is very, very important. I'm glad that she's there, and I think the German people should appreciate her. Certainly, I've appreciated her as a partner.
Just over 12,000 Afghans living in Germany are expected to be repatriated. That's according to a news report citing a German government document. The report notes that Afghans living in Germany, whose asylum applications have been rejected, would have to return despite reports of a worsening civil war in parts of the country. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The onslaught in the besieged, rebel-held Syrian city of Aleppo continues as nearly 25 civilians were killed in a car bomb attack in the north of the city on Thursday. That follows a Russian-backed Syrian shelling campaign in Aleppo, in which nearly 20 people were killed, and the World Health Organization says healthcare centers were targeted.
Well, the World Health Organization strongly condemns this latest wave of attacks on healthcare facilities. In the last 48 hours, there were six attacks on hospitals and health centers in western rural Aleppo, east Aleppo, as well as in Idlib. These attacks not only left casualties, but these facilities are now closed and that population has no access to health services.
The renewed attacks, which began days after almost a month of stalled fighting, has claimed over 50 civilians. The UN says food rations for hundreds of thousands of trapped civilians could run out any day. The International Organization for Migration has said some 300 migrants have died or gone missing at sea in recent days. The IOM's spokesperson said more than 4,000 people have died so far this year, the worst year on record. Many of those seeking shelter in Europe are departing from Libya despite worsening seas as winter approaches. And now in other news, social media giant Twitter has suspended outright accounts for harassment in a delicate balance between protecting free speech and curbing online bullying. Twitter has said internet trolling has risen since the U.S. presidential election. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
We begin the program by looking at the Donors Conference on the Central African Republic in Brussels. CAAR President Faustin Achange Touadéré told the conference that his country needed $1.68 billion for security and economic development. This, he said, would combat militant violence and a worsening humanitarian crisis. The mineral-rich but impoverished country plunged into violent conflict after predominantly Muslim Seleka rebels overthrew the then-president, Christian president, President François Bozizé in March 2013. As the donors meet, the Archbishop of Bangui, Cardinal Dedeni Nzapalanga, has a message for the donors and the leadership of the country. Take a listen.
La situation au pays est précaire.
The country is in a fragile state because there is no national army. We rely on the UN MINUSCA peacekeeping forces, but they can't be everywhere in a large country like this. Certain areas are still controlled by warlords who exercise the right over life and death. Often MINUSCA has no access at all to such areas and the population is left to its fate. Building a national army is a pressing issue in order to ensure that East, West, North and South, all the different ethnic groups join together to protect their nation. Today, we count on the limited number of UN troops. It is time for a national army to contribute in making the Central African Republic return to normalcy.
Cardinal Dedeni Nzapalainga, Archbishop of Bangui. And to find out about donors' commitment, I spoke to Ilaria Alegoreze of Amnesty International, and I started by asking her in which ways the EU was willing to contribute to Central African Republic's move to overcome the present structural deficits in the areas of governance and development.
We think this is a key opportunity for all donors to the Central African Republic to really make a difference and to pledge enough resources to make a change in CAR. We don't know whether this is going to be the last opportunity, but we feel it is a key opportunity anyway, especially to invest in certain sectors and particularly justice, which is key, especially because there is a climate of impunity in CAR, where you have members of armed groups and militia alleged to have committed appalling human rights violations and also crimes under international law, who are still freely moving around throughout the country and continue to fuel violence.
Now, just to follow up on that, what is the state of human rights in the country, considering that, apart from what you just said, there is also presence of LRA rebels in some parts of the country?
The security situation has sharply deteriorated since September, with numerous attacks against civilians throughout the country, in Bangui, but also in the provinces, including in Kagabandoro. UN protection was attacked, and almost 40 people were killed by ex-Seleka fighters. So violence is still going on, and it is fueled by this climate of impunity.
We know that the Central African Republic also has its own court, which they call Special Criminal Court. What are your expectations in regard to the appeal that the European Union should actually support this court?
Well, the Special Criminal Court represents really a unique opportunity to ensure accountability in the Central African Republic at the moment. It is a short-term solution given that the state of the national justice system is very weak at the moment. It is key to build also the public confidence in the justice system in CAR to bring an end to the pervasive culture of impunity, and is an opportunity also to draw from lessons learned, both positive and negative, from the experiences of other tribunals established also in other post-conflict situations.
I was speaking to Ilaria Algarozo of Amnesty International.
And we have a comment to that topic. Nathan Mark said, good move, EU. Help the CAR become self-reliant. Africa has enough unexploited resources.
Thanks to Nathan for that comment. We will come back to that topic a little later. But first, here in Germany, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel is hosting the outgoing US President Barack Obama in Berlin. In an interview with German's public broadcaster ARD and Die Spiegel, Obama emphasized the need for free press, calling it the cornerstone for democracy. Let's now join DW's Daniel Pelz in Berlin. Daniel, what's the mood like as Obama makes his last official trip as US President?
Well, I think the sky is telling it all because it's a grey and rainy November day. The weather really is pretty shabby and pretty sorrowful. And I think the same is true for the political arena here in Berlin. Quite a number of the high-ranking officials here are sad that President Obama is leaving office. not everything was well during his presidency. I mean, we had the NSA affair where it turned out that the National Security Agency of the US did wide-reaching espionage in Germany. There were even allegations that Chancellor Merkel's phone was tapped. But I mean, there were plenty of issues where the political elite here felt that Obama was a faithful ally of Germany and of Europe. For instance, I mean, views were pretty similar on climate change. Obama always pledged and also took some initiatives to fight climate change. And for instance, also on international conflicts in the world, Obama was always pushing for a less aggressive foreign policy. He was more focused on peaceful solutions to international conflicts. So people are sad that he is leaving, and at the same time, they are worried because nobody here in the political arena knows what to expect from Donald Trump.
So what are the people in Berlin saying about Obama's presidency?
Well, I think a lot of people are really going to miss him. They are very sad he's leaving office. My colleagues from DWTV did go around and ask some people. Let's listen in what this one has to say.
Natürlich werden wir den vermissen, gerade in Hinsicht jetzt zu dem neuen Präsidenten.
Of course we all miss him, especially when you think of who is succeeding him. Although his presidency has been subject to criticism, he still has been a good president. Not like his successor, who makes you feel uneasy. Now, we hear Obama is taking care to introduce Trump into his duties and trying to give him guidance. That's a very clever move. We'll miss him.
Wir werden ihn vermissen, denke ich, ja.
Er war freundlich.
He was a kind person, good-natured and peace-loving. He wasn't polemic, but he was a very likable individual.
Er war als Mensch sympathisch.
Some Germans, they are expressing how they are going to miss President Barack Obama. Now, reparations with a tendency to genocide. That's the title of a report by the International Federation for Human Rights pinning Burundi of human rights violation. The report also claims that the country is on the verge of genocide. But as Apollinaire Ninyerora reports, the Burundian government has rejected the report, saying it only intends to attract international attention.
The report published in Paris, France on Tuesday by the International Federation for Human Rights with the collaboration of Burundi-based Iteka Human Rights League was entitled Repressions with a Tendency to Genocide. Speaking to DW, Willy Niyamitwe, senior communications advisor at the office of the Burundian president, rejected the report that he termed biased and full of lies. Niyamitwe denied any possibility of genocide in Burundi.
The government of Burundi has rejected the content of this report because we see that the aim is that to draw the attention of the international community, saying that in Burundi there is a risk of genocide. There is no risk of genocide in this country. And this narrative has been used by some people who just tried to destabilize the country. So this NGO is violating human rights. Because you cannot say that you are a defender of human rights when you are propagating some rumors and false information.
Niyamitwe, however, acknowledged that some people lost their lives during the crisis that broke out last year, but said that the report defends Rwanda about acts of destabilizing Burundi, namely recruiting and training youths in order to attack Burundi.
When you go through this report, you will find that the report is trying to defend the position of Rwanda, when Rwanda has been claiming that all the problems in Burundi are Burundians and Burundians have to sit down and find out a solution to their problems, but trying to hide its aggression against Burundi. Even this report tries to defend the position of Rwanda, claiming that all the allegations from Burundi are completely wrong.
The report says that the crisis, which broke out in Burundi in April last year, following the third-term bid of Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza, has left 1,000 dead and between 300 and 800 disappeared. It also says that about 8,000 people are detained in various custodies and prisons.
That report was compiled by Apollinaire Ninyerora in the Burundian capital, Burundi.
And let's go back to that story, the EU's conference on the CAR. Now, the EU has been tweeting on that issue, saying that 65% of people in the CAR do not have access to safe sanitation. And with $262 million provided since 2004, the EU is the largest donor there. It does feel like the EU is blowing its trumpet, isn't it?
Certainly. They are very good at giving us big figures, but I wonder what the impact of that figure is. I mean, it's always the same story. Lots of money and doesn't seem to be having an impact on it, Abu.
Indeed.
Well, Abu, that is it for now. We'll come back to social discussion a little later. There's going to be a lot more talk, but for now, let's take a break. You're listening to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. Still to come, need for divine intervention. Christians in southwestern Cameroon pray for youth convicted for Boko Haram video jokes on social media.
Social media is inevitable. It's like a devil that you are called upon to live with. It's difficult to suppress it.
And we shall get even more interactive as Abu Bakari brings us a lot from social media.
And we are following two interesting, I call them interesting hashtags in Kenya, Miguna Respect Women, and how Ghanaians are continually using the political hashtag Ready for Change.
I'm excited to hear about that. But first, let's go to the Horn of Africa and look at Ethiopia's hammer and sickle past. Now, in 1974, a revolution in Ethiopia crushed an ancient imperial legacy and ushered a communist era. Now, Soviet leaders believed that Ethiopia could be their African socialist stronghold as they vied with the United States for influence and control on the continent. The Horn of Africa was of special interest due to its proximity to the crucial shipping channel connecting the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean. But the communist ideology was always a particularly strange fit for a country like Ethiopia, deeply rooted in religion and a land that has always resisted foreign influence. James Jeffrey reporting.
America was not helpful. They did a very stupid mistake when Somalia was waging war against Ethiopia. The Americans even refused to supply the arms that we paid for. I mean, they just forced us to go into the hands of the Soviets.
That is Abebe Hailu, a human rights lawyer in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. During the 1970s, Abebe Hailu was a law student, caught up in the swelling student movement that contributed to the downfall of Emperor Haile Selassie in 1974. Ethiopia's revolution, however, began to unravel over disagreements about how it should proceed. This resulted in a full military takeover, with Mengistu at the helm during one of Ethiopia's darkest periods. In addition to fighting against Somalia, in Ethiopia's north, an insurgency sought Eritrean independence. Desperate for military hardware, Mengistu did his best to embrace Marxist-Leninist ideology to keep Moscow happy. But Ethiopians began to tire of communist rhetoric that clashed with indigenous traditions, especially Ethiopia's strong Christian legacy stretching back to the 4th century. Another student at that time who found himself caught up in the whirlwind was Tamrat Kebede. The smartly dressed gentleman remembers how the grand stage of Revolution Square began to take on a less impressive aura.
But there was a picture of Marx, Lenin and Engels there, a huge one. We are used, this pre-revolution, we are used to at least our own heroes, you know, Theodore or Menelik, and these three guys whose beard and so on come, who have no connection with the culture of society.
Increasing dissent during the revolution resulted in Mengistu launching the so-called Red Terror and the killing of tens of thousands accused of being anti-revolutionaries. Every dawn in the Ethiopian capital revealed bodies littering the streets, many dumped on the edges of the city to be dealt with by the city's hyena population. As the 1980s drew to a close, the Soviet Union itself was undergoing radical changes, meaning its relationship with the Derg and the communist experiment in Ethiopia came under increasing pressure. After the tanks of the rebels fighting the Derg rolled into Addis Ababa in May 1991, Mengistu having fled to Zimbabwe, Soviet influence in Ethiopia all but disappeared. Patrick Jilks, a journalist who covered Ethiopia at that time, says the disintegration of the Soviet Union played a major role in ending communism in Ethiopia, but that the Horn of Africa is brilliant at courting world powers.
America and Russia and others have always seen Ethiopia as something they could use. Ethiopia's actually been fairly confident about using America or Russia for its own advantages.
Nowadays, it is the US, the European Union, Gulf countries,
and especially China, which play an important role in Ethiopia.
James Jeffrey reporting in Addis Ababa.
Uzon.
Journalist Mike Royko once said, it has been, and I quote, it has been my policy to view the internet not as an information highway, but as an electronic asylum filled with bubbling loonies. Well, that's his opinion, but internet users believe that it keeps us closer to our friends and family. After all, the other party is only a Skype call or a WhatsApp message away. Does that mean that we all know about each other's lives? Or are the stereotypes now a thing of the past? Malta Rova Kalman finds out.
In a small conference room in a museum in Bonn, Germany, two school classes, so around 50 teenagers, are waiting for a writer to show up and tell them about Africa. It's still early, around 9 a.m., but everyone seems excited and chatty. So I walk around and I ask the teenagers what springs to mind when they think of Africa.
Armut, poverty, and people who are not feeling well.
Poor children. It's sad under what circumstances they live.
Arme Leute.
Poor people. That's it.
Poverty. That's literally the first thing I hear from everyone I speak to. I didn't expect that. I mean, yes, Africa is the world's poorest continent. But it's also the youngest in terms of its population. And the oldest in terms of how long people have been living there. There are 54 countries and more than 1,000 languages. It's incredibly diverse, rich in culture and history and nature, and yet all that is apparently not what teenagers here associate with it.
When man von Slums hört, dann wird einem oft so gezeigt, dass
they always show us the slums in Africa. Charities always ask us to donate because there are so many slums. That's what the media tells us. Africa, they are not doing well.
So, ja, Afrika, denen geht's nicht gut.
That's Tom. He's 16 and he's never been to any country in Africa. Actually, he thinks Africa is a country and not a continent. Yeah. But Tom doesn't strike me as ignorant or indifferent. On the contrary, he's curious.
Afrika ist bestimmt kein schlechtes Land, das zu sehen.
I really like to go to Africa. Someone just telling you something is never the same as actually seeing it. Most of the time, it has more of an impact when you see something.
The guy you hear talking in the background, that's Lutz van Dijk. He's the writer I talked about earlier. Lutz is 61, but he looks a lot younger. He's half German, half Dutch, but he spent the last 15 years in South Africa, close to Cape Town. That's where he founded a children's home, where he now lives and works. Lutz writes books about young people in Africa, and twice a year he comes to Germany to read them to children and teenagers here. And while he's at it, he also teaches them some Xhosa. Lutz knows a lot of young people in South Africa and in Germany, and so he knows what they think about each other.
There are also lots of stereotypes towards the European continent, as if everybody is rich, everybody has a car. And when some of my friends visited us in Amsterdam or in Hamburg, then they were surprised to see begging people in the station, for example.
Generalizing, stereotyping, labeling, whatever you want to call it, it seems to happen everywhere, despite the internet. And most of the time, what people from different countries think about each other is not even true. Lutz tries to make them realize that.
If I tell stories about young people of their generation, and if they can identify with boys and girls or teenagers or young people of their age under very different circumstances, then suddenly stereotypes break because they understand the dreams of this young generation.
We're all human, that's his message. It's hard to remember that sometimes, because most of the time our differences are what defines us. I'm from here, you're from there. I'm a boy, you're a girl, I'm white, you're black. But maybe we should try and focus less on what divides us and more on what we have in common.
Malte Rova Kalman finding out what some German youth know about Africa.
Speaking out.
Now, Abu, I'll be waiting for your comments on this story because it's about social media. Because social media is one thing that can be fun but can also be dangerous. And before you know, you might just find yourself landing into trouble. That's just what happened to three young Cameroonians. Having exchanged jokes about the militant group Boko Haram, they were convicted by the military court and will spend the next decade in jail. You may call it suppression of freedom of expression, but some Christian brethren think the only way to save them now is divine intervention. Mogi Kinseka reports.
Christians from the Presbyterian Church Bota in Limbe, southwestern Cameroon, sing to ask God's intervention for the lives of 27-year-old Formoso Ivofe and his two friends, Afu Nivilfo and Aza Levis Gop. The three were convicted by a military court in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, for allegedly using their mobile phones to share jokes concerning the terrorist group Boko Haram. Among the Christians who are concerned about the three convicts is Tabot Timothy, a 22-year-old law student at the University of Douala, Cameroon. He says the military court was excessive in its sentencing.
The authorities in place could have actually carried out a thorough investigation to see into it whether we're actually having something to do with Boko Haram. The fact that these guys were joking, it is unjust. Thorough investigations were not carried out.
30-year-old Apande Kome, who has known Formoso Ivofe for 3 years, says the three should have been given different punishments for exchanging jokes concerning Boko Haram.
It would have been possible that they should give that child grass cutting rather than giving him 10 years imprisonment. Yes, he can clean roads, crack stones, even this without eating, for him to understand that, no, what he has done is really bad.
The three were arrested on December 13, 2014, after exchanging SMS referring to Boko Haram. It has not been revealed what the content of the message was, but they were transferred to Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, where they were last week sentenced by a military court. Rights activist Bakari Baba of Dynamique Citoyenne, an organization that works for the protection of people's rights, says he believes Cameroon used its 2014 law authorizing sanctions of up to capital punishment for those guilty of acts of terrorism or those found caught aiding or collaborating with terrorists.
Loi liberticide. Nous avions reculé de 50 ans.
Cameroon has turned the clock back 50 years. Even though the country is being threatened with terrorism, that does not mean the government can penalize its citizens as if they were terrorists themselves. Cameroon should respect international laws and human rights as laid down in international agreements and the country's constitution.
Other critics of the government's decision, such as social media specialist Nelson Tawe, says it will be difficult for the government to silence people who use social media to express themselves.
Social media is inevitable. It's like a devil that you are called upon to live with. It's difficult to suppress it. It's just going to be like throwing water on the duck's back. Social media has come to stay. There's no way you can suppress it. I think that government will have an uphill task to succeed in what it's trying to do. Social media remains what it is, social media.
That report was compiled by Moki Kinseka, and I tell you, Abu is itching to tell us what's happening on social media.
Absolutely,
Abu, have your way.
I am, because you never know, some of those hashtags that you see, they usually take a tone for something worse. Speaking about hashtag, let's start with this one, Miguna Respect Women.
That must be from Kenya. It sounds a Kenyan name. What's the story behind this hashtag, Abu?
Okay, so Miguna is a former advisor to Raila Odinga, who's the opposition leader of the coalition party court, and Esther Passaris is also a candidate for the governorship of Nairobi.
And so we're talking about two politicians here.
Two politicians on live debate on TV, and then Esther accused Miguna of rape, and then Miguna responded. Esther believes that she is so beautiful that everyone wants to rape her.
that sparked controversy.
Is this the latest mode of political campaigns? I've been considering Trump with the lady business and now Kenya, some stuff with sexism, if I should say.
Okay, let me give you this one. So this response was, the day women will stop looking for sponsors is the day they will accorded respect. Respect is not an end. The other hashtag is started by the Ghanaian. Anyways, we don't have much time for that, so I'll leave it back to you.
It's very unfortunate we can't discuss a lot more on that, but I know that there's something still on our social media. Thank you so much for that, Abu. We have to leave it at that.
And keep the conversation on Facebook.
Thank you very much, Abu. That brings us to all that we have for today. Thank you for giving us company, and we do hope that you'll join us tomorrow, same time. From me, Jane Ayeka-Kumet, that was it.